How are you guys doing? Welcome over to the channel. If you guys like to listen to audio podcasts, please do me a favor. Click the link at the top of the description and go follow us over on Apple, Spotify, wherever you guys get the podcast. And please leave a review. It helps out a ton. So you can listen to stuff when you're on your way to work or sitting at school, or I guess, yeah, don't do this when you're at school, but driving home, whatever it is. Go check us out over on the podcast side of things. Just speak the truth. It'll be linked at the very top of the description. So today has actually been a very interesting day thus far. Like, when I mean pretty interesting, I'm talking about all over the world. We have to get through this thing, and it's ranging literally from all over the world, as well as not just solely in Ukraine, which has been pretty much the case the last 5 months or so. Now, I want to go ahead and start off the day leading up to Pelosi visiting. She was going to be visiting Taiwan. You all know this. She's also already landed here a few hours ago. So the Chinese have actually ramped up this crazy talk leading to her initial departure, okay, from the United States, saying that they would actually shoot down her plane if she attempted to make this trip to Taiwan. Now, I will say they did take some pretty serious precautions when it comes to making this trip, and they decided to ground everything related to China. This is the sea, you know, South China Sea. That's where they try to go around. They even added 8 U.S. F-15 fighter jets and 5 tanker aircrafts that were, of course, going to refuel these things. And these were going to help them get into the country safely. And they actually came out of our base inside of Okinawa, Japan. So out of Japan. And even before her arrival, we ended up actually moving two aircraft carrier groups and 2 amphibious assault groups into the region. Like, they were, like, ramping this thing up very heavily. So we have 2 aircraft carrier groups inside the area. China only has 2 aircraft carriers as a whole, just so you guys are aware. Then the day before her arrival, the Biden administration officials actually warned the Chinese government not to take escalatory, wow, that's kind of a tough word, escalatory actions during her trip, and emphasized the potential visit would actually, it would not mark a shift in American foreign policy. Now, the days leading up to her arrival with the rhetoric, it seemed to get a bit more ramped up. That is coming from the Chinese Communist Party, that is. Now, they go on to some of the same talking points we have seen from bullies in the past when it comes to Russia, China, whatever it is, and how they're going to hold us responsible for all these serious consequences. But the thing is, they never really actually dictate what those serious consequences are. Like, with a little bit of research, you can probably make a judgment call that the Chinese were actually never going to do anything about this first trip. Like, this was nothing more than just posturing and tried to appear really strong. Like, 80% of Chinese economy, that is the Chinese economy, relies on America. So there's one thing. And after just a little bit more digging, you actually realize their economy isn't doing as well as you would assume. I mean, they've been in lockdown multiple times over what you guys know, the Strand is what I'm going to call it. 50% of their country currently, yes, 50% of their country has currently stopped making mortgage payments. They've almost shut down certain parts of their economy for months at a time. Like, what would you expect to happen? Like, anyway, these are just minor things, okay? They're just minor. Like, who cares if a civilian population can barely afford to even pay their mortgage? That's not going to stop them from entering a very costly war with a country that is literally 80% of their country's revenue. Throw that one out there. So, but you know what? Put those things aside and see how they may have tried to make themselves look to the world. Now, this video was actually posted right before her visit to Taiwan.
So the clip you're about to watch is actually, I had to actually remove the audio because for some reason the Chinese government decided to use 3-6 Mafia. Yes, the rap group from the early 2000s, 3-6 Mafia, for their hype music in this video. And the whole video got copyright strikes. So here you go. Look, we have, it's basically just a bunch of Chinese guys running around acting really mad, coming out of the water. Look at them running through the woods. Look at that face. He is freaking mad. Now they're flying around. There's a lot of clips. I mean, this had to take them a long time to put together. I mean, this is not something like, look at that. Look at that shot. Ooh, the pan shot with the drone. Way to go. They probably did it with the DJI. Amazing. Has a really cool feature on there for that. So way to go. Oh, now they're running again. Oh, they're reacting to contact like they're about to get. They couldn't pick a better looking rocket launcher than one that looks all beat up. A training one, that is. Oh, look, now we're back in the sea. Oh, we're back on air. I think they're just trying to paint the picture that they can beat us land, sea, and air. Doesn't matter if we try to attack, which America's not going to attack China, so I don't really know what this video is even for. But it's to let you know that the Chinese Communist Party is ready for action. They have their land, sea. They can do barrel rolls in the sky. I mean, look at this. They can refuel in the sky. It's pretty neat. And they want to show us that they can drive around their missile launchers and hit that button. Oh, hit that green button. There's always, and I'm glad it was shot with cell phone footage because they forgot to get that shot. They're like, all right, you guys need to go back to the field and get that one shot of you pushing the green button. And look, now they're shooting. Oh, they hit a building with a rocket. Way to go. This is really terrifying footage. I guess they haven't been watching a lot of America's footage because we don't really make these kind of videos because we don't really need to because, well, we are the superpower in the world. When you're at the top, you really don't need to tell everybody that you're the best. Oh, my God. Look at all those guys. Oh, he's so mad. Look at his fist pumping. That's all I can think. All right. Oh, the sickle and hammer. Yeah, it's got you guys real far in the world. The two countries that want to have the sickle and hammer are still number two in like 20. So way to go. Oh, God. Look at you guys shooting from the ocean onto your own. Like, that's really cool. Look at that. Basically, you just caught, you're wasting a bunch of fuel. I have no clue what that says right there, but I'm sure it's really angry. Really angry. Like, really angry.
Now, you know, looking somewhat at this video, it's a long video, but they're a legitimate enemy. Like, they really have they're a real threat to America when it comes to how well-equipped their men are. They seem really, really, really angry for some reason. I don't know if it's just because that's what their language sounds like, but they really do sound pretty angry. Now, on the day of our arrival, they were really ramping up this rhetoric by announcing that they were going to move both of their aircraft carriers, that is the Chinese military, out of their home ports. Then they started having these very large convoys or columns, whichever you like to call them, of equipment moving through the streets of Fujian province towards the coast. And to make the even more bold statement, they decided they needed to actually drive around their intercontinental ballistic missiles, which, by the way, have a range of 12,000 to 15,000 kilometers. Yes, intercontinental ballistic missiles, 12,000 to 15,000. They had to drive these things around. For what reason, I don't really know. Like, why do you need to move these things 20 kilometers closer to Taiwan if they literally can touch 15,000? Is this not really just a show of force? I don't know. Now, an even funnier clip is the fact that it is kind of goofy when you think about it, but the Chinese actually put some tanks on their beaches. They're rolling around on their beaches. I don't really know what this was for. But after putting these tanks on the beach to try and stop the Taiwan from invading for some reason, or maybe they're going to take these tanks and just float them across the canal or the strait or the OC or whatever they're called. I think it was mainly just done to impress the local population, which it did. And it got the internet to make all these videos about the Chinese rolling equipment and how they're going to be prepping for war and whatnot. But anyway, after her landing, Nancy, of course, you know, she had to tweet out to let the world know that everyone that her discussions with Taiwan leadership were going to reaffirm the support for her partner, our partner, and that is the United States, and promote our shared interests in including advancing a free and open region. We all know that's not going to happen. That's not really a thing. If China is involved, it's not going to be a thing. Honestly, I'm really glad she went, and I said this the other day, I really hope she does, and she did. Like, I'm not really a big fan of what she does here in America because it doesn't really matter. Like, American politics right now, they're really goofy. I don't really like her as a whole in America, but it doesn't really matter. This shows that America is still the superpower in the world, and China is going to be very embarrassed. They were trying to throw around this rhetoric and say, yeah, we're going to shoot you down, and nothing happened. Now, looking forward, what are they going to do or plan to do? Because it's only a few hours since she's landed. And we've made them look pretty stupid. I'm just going to throw that out there. I mean, they don't want to seem weak to their population. And honestly, the Russian outlets that I do follow, that I mainly get a lot of my info from, we're really excited about them taking some aggression out of the United States. But that hasn't really panned out too well because I can tell you right now, The Chinese military doesn't really know what they're going to do, but they did announce, by the way, they did announce they're going to be conducting military exercises and training activities, which will include live fire drills in six separate areas surrounding the island of Taiwan. This is going to happen between Thursday and Sunday. So what is that, 4 days straight? Now, I was looking at these little sectors, I guess you would say, and they're literally surrounding the entire island. So you're going to have, I don't know, that's a good question. Is Pelosi going to be there when these are going on, or are they waiting till she leaves to start them? And they also closed off all the airspace above this area between Taiwan and China for civilian aircrafts. Like, they can't fly through. This is nothing more, by the way, than a child getting mad because they could not get their way and then following up by throwing a massive temper tantrum. That's pretty much what China is doing currently. Now, some big news also coming out of, well, it's a pretty big deal, coming out of the Biden administration. I want to give them a round of applause. So I just want to give them a slow little clap here because they have now taken out a 9/11 mastermind, the co-mastermind, I guess you would say, of the 9/11 attacks that happened in New York. Now, he was hiding in a safe house inside of Kabul under Taliban protection, which is somewhat ironic in the sense that the guy who was one of the masterminds of the 9/11 attacks was being protected by the Taliban, who was most likely protecting him with weapons that were left behind by the Biden administration a couple of months ago. I don't know. That doesn't really matter right now because, anyway, it doesn't really matter. Now, this gentleman stepped out on his balcony, apparently, and was hit with Hellfire missiles. Now, whenever he moved out of Afghanistan, the Haqqani Network had moved him in to Kabul. This is the gentleman we're talking about. And then he was identified to be living in the home next to a former U.S. embassy compound. Yes, and just down the street was the, I think it was the British compound as well. Now, you want to know something is really crazy? He was taken out by a drone, which we know that was clearly flying at a very high altitude. And the variant of missile that was actually used did not have explosives in them. Yes, it did not have explosives. These missiles actually just had a steel blades on it, which then smashed in the balcony, taking him out and not injuring anybody else in his family. So imagine this guy, this biggest scum of the earth, was diced up by flying rockets like something you couldn't see and or hear. All this should be for you guys is don't be a scumbag terrorist. The United States will not hunt you down with giant blades. That is, that's actually pretty terrifying if you think about it. It's very futuristic, like flying scissors, essentially. Now, the more I'm working on today's episode, by the way, is the more I'm realizing we're like in a weird spot in the world's current state. I've said this many times. We're like in the 1930s, but present day, on a modern 1930s. Like now we have China and Taiwan, then you have Ukraine and Russia, and then there's some issues going on in Kosovo, which is crazy. Not to mention the issues that are constantly going on in Africa. I don't ever touch on those, but let's go ahead and talk about Iran. Once again, now Iran is now vowing to build nukes if they are provoked. And apparently they claim they're going to be turning New York into a hellish ruins. Kind of weird. I don't want to burst Iran's bubble here, but New York is already a little bit hellish and it's mainly just ruins as of late. So they won't really be accomplishing much there. It's also getting kind of comical at this point because all these countries are just claiming they're going to take on America with military might as if they have some sort of real chance. Like, not to deviate from this Iran thing, but just last week we all know North Korea said they're ready to take on America's military themselves when they can't even afford to feed their civilian population. This is coming from two Telegram channels, by the way, that have posted the same video that's claiming to have quickly started building bombs if the U.S. makes any stupid mistakes. Now, these same channels claim that there's a secret underground facility in Fordow. If they're putting it out there, the U.S. knows about it. Anyway, they're close to apparently making the Islamic Republic into a working nuclear power and warned that peaceful nuclear programs could morph into a weaponized one. Now, I watched the video. It's not even good enough, honestly, to share with you all in here. It's maybe good enough to barely make it past a high school film class, but I'm just going to point out the obvious. They're claiming that they're going to take on these so-called peaceful nuclear programs and then turn them into weaponized ones even before they're made. So that was probably the original reason why we don't want them to have nuclear capabilities in the first place. They don't even have them right now, and yet they're talking about using them as weapons. By the way, if you live in New York listening, I just want to say I was slightly kidding about the city. It's very beautiful. Just do us a favor and clean it up a little bit. Anyway, another former Kremlin advisor. Yes, a Kremlin advisor has been hospitalized. This is not funny. It's the second one I know of. He goes by the name of Anatoly Chubis, and he's resigned after Russia invaded Ukraine. So this guy clearly is not for the Russian invasion. He left just afterwards. He was a prominent fixture in the 90s, by the way, Russian politics, and he's been an ally of Putin since the early 90s. He oversaw the privatization during the Russians' transition to a market economy. He became the chief executive of Russia's power monopoly. Power monopoly. Before Russia actually invaded Ukraine, he was actually Putin's international climate envoy, or he served on it. It's a better way to put it, I guess. He's also one of the highest level Russian officials to resign from Putin's government since February. He's been diagnosed with a rare syndrome in which the body's immune system attacks the nerve, and apparently specialists were wearing chemical protection suits when they examined the room in which he had suddenly become ill in. I do believe the last time we heard about someone close to the Kremlin who opposed the war was getting some type of chemical type reaction. It was back in March. One of the oligarchs had blisters started peeling all over his face and his hands. I think he was doing a meeting between Turkey. He was in Turkey or something. Don't hold me exactly to that because it's been a few months. It's literally been like 5 months or so before the thing. But I believe this actually happened once before. Now, the Ministry of Defense of Russia, the Russian Federation, that is, has reported that they have been allegedly destroyed at HIMARS, and they released a video proving so. Yes, what you saw was correct. That was apparently a new version of the HIMARS that works on the second floor of a power plant building. So, congrats, Russian military. You have now taken out a HIMARS that's inside of a building somehow. I don't know how that's possible. But anyway, the Russian Ministry of Defense has now actually said the Biden administration is responsible for all Kyiv-approved missile attacks on residential neighborhoods and civilian infrastructure inside of populated areas, which apparently we all know has caused mass deaths of the civilian population. Now, this is somewhat strange claim, of course, because we all know it's not true. It's just one way for them to actually try to paint the picture that America is the bad guy, but they're basing all these facts off apparently American intel alongside with British intel has been tracking down Russian spies and supply lines. That's where they're basing this off of. Now, I don't really know how they are going to correlate each other, but I guess America is now responsible for all the Russian artillery that has been shot into the buildings and turned the cities into rubble. I don't really know how that's a possibility, but they're claiming it. And speaking on the fact that they turned cities into rubble, please take a look at the recent video that is coming out of Mariupol.
Вот такой вот здесь видно город открывается с высоты птичьего полета. Хлопает до сих пор на это стали. Хлоп, хлоп.
Зеркало видно на центральном этом.
Какой пейзаж, да?
Домины или чай отсюда немножко видим.
А мы сейчас зайдем в другую комнату, там, да, с той стороны будет лучше.
Конвертера, что от конвертера осталось? Вот эта труба, вот это здание, это все конвертерное цеха осталось.
Now, Russia has been building the ghost bridges down in Kherson with these radar reflectors. I've seen photos. I think I started seeing photos like 3 days ago or so, but I wasn't really sure what they were for, so I never really mentioned it. They just look like big, bright triangle things in the water. Like, I'm not fully sure, like, what they were for. Like, I didn't know. Like, for one, they're not going to be effective against Ukrainian stuff for the most part. I mean, a lot of the stuff they're using right now is GPS-guided. You know, like I'd see it could be effective maybe with like infrared or maybe some sort of deception purpose because they do show up on satellite imagery and they look to be like a real bridge from far away. Like they really do on an imagery that is a floating one at least. Like anyway, you'll see inside this video, it's very clear they're there and the Russians are attempting to let the world know that their makeshift ferry is a crossing and it's still up and running. Now, if I know about it, the whole world knows about it. The Ukrainians know about that thing, so just let that be known. Last thing we're going to speak on before moving on to some mapping is the fact the Institute for Study of War has said the Russian forces are responsible for the killing of the 53 Ukrainian POWs that happened here a few days ago. Now, if you do not know what I am talking about, I advise you to go listen to my previous episode because we dive deep into this topic. One of the things we did discuss is the fact that the Russians claimed that the HIMARS hit the prison and took out the camp, killing all the prisoners, which we all know wasn't true because somehow the HIMARS didn't target the Russian guards. But according to the ISW, the attack only damaged one building without collapsing its walls or leaking or leaving any shell craters inside the vicinity, indicating that the destruction of the prison was the result of either a precision strike or an internally planted incendiary grenade or incendiary device and or an explosive. Now, this goes back to what we discussed in the previous episode on it had to be done by the Russians. And, I mean, we saw some of the brutal stuff that they were putting, and it was very, very brutal, and I do not recommend anybody go watch it at all. Like, do not go search for it. It was terrible. Now, let's move on to something that has a little bit to do with the what's going on inside of Ukraine itself on the ground. Now, there has been two separate attacks that have happened in the northern part of Kyiv, but for the most part, once again, this area really isn't the focus for the Russian military as of just yet, and oddly enough, it seems like these areas are just rotating on which area or side they really want to push through. And the two areas they try to push through here in Rubizhne, just north of that, and on this main route E-105 that comes in. They try to push through and nothing came of it. Now, right now, they're still stalled out, that is, on the southern side of Izium. And it looks like there was two separate Russian recon elements that were actually attempting to push through Dolnya and Dovenki, but were actually unsuccessful and have actually retreated. Okay, now I normally don't do this without getting confirmation, but from what I can find, it seems that the Russian element that was inside of Bohorodichyn has now retreated to the opposite side of the river. Okay, so we're looking, the Russian element that was inside of the city, I'm pretty positive they've retreated to the backside of this river, and the area of Dolnya all along here, these people have started the retreat. So I don't really know what's going on, and Dovenki is, of course, just north of here. So the Russians are now losing control of this area, and they're pushing more north back towards Izium. I said it wasn't likely that they were going to hold this area, that is Bohorodichyn, that is the Russians, due to their inability to actually resupply. And then they also had to deal with the northern element of the Ukrainian pushing down on top of them. But I think they did make the right decision for pulling out of this area. I'm going to go ahead and say Dovenki is going to get lost, or they're going to lose Dovenki over the next day or so if they cannot maintain. And what are they trying to do in this area? What are the Russians trying to do in the Izium area? They weren't able to push towards Slovyansk from here. Are they going to retreat back here, move these men out? I don't know what's going on. Like, this may sound kind of crazy, by the way. I've seen from a few different sources that are claiming that the Russians are now shifting their manpower from the Eastern Front and pushing more and more and more of their men down towards Kherson. Like, I could see this being a possibility if they don't want to lose this area. It seems somewhat goofy because this would be the third time during this five-month war that they would have been forced to allocate men from one side of the country to stop the bleeding the other side. Like, that is, like, we are talking, like, I'm going to go over to this map real quick, the bigger map. So here we go. We've seen them shift men from, it's actually not even on this map, from Kyiv down to Kharkiv. That didn't pan out. Then they shifted these men all the way around here. They gained some ground, as we know. All these little red blocks you see over here outside of Lyschansk, we know that they gained a little bit of ground there. Now they're stalled out here on this front right here. Now they're making another push, which we'll talk about here in a second, just south of Bakhmut. But are they really shifting all of these men over to Kyiv? Do you see how far that is? The logistical nightmare to get these men down to this area is absolutely insane. But anyway, just wanted to throw that one out there because I keep seeing it. And I'm like, God, I don't know if I believe that. Maybe it is true. Like, I do know for sure that the Russians have been making some progress just south of Bakhmut. All along this eastern side, literally this entire area right here, they have done nothing, literally nothing, over the last 2 weeks. Crazy, right? Like, it's pretty crazy. Like, they have been shifting all their air assets and artillery assets inside of the region of Bakhmut, all the way through here, the southern side. Now, it goes back to what I believe to be the case. Remember, ridgeline, all through right there. I think this has a lot to do with it. I think they're running into some, they're realizing they're having some terrain difficulties. And if you guys are listening over the podcast, we're talking about the northern side of Bakhmut, all three directions, there's ridgelines. And they're realizing, wow, we probably need to maintain and get control of these routes. Like, they're currently on the edge of Solodar right now and have been attempting to gain some of the ground over the past few days inside of this area with little to no success. So they have moved up. There roughly is a lot of fighting going on just on the edge of Soledar. But remember, on the backside of Soledar, what is it? It's high ground. Like I told you guys this around a month ago, they're going to be able to get to this main road right here that leads out of Backmont. But getting past that and getting through that really high ridge line is going to be very, very difficult. Okay. Now we're going to move south here. They have made a little bit of progress actually down here south. Just south of Backmont, that is. The Russians have been amping up the attacks around the town of Avika and have made some headway towards the town of Pisky. So just right here is Pisky and just outside of Avika. They are adding up or starting to actually maneuver some men down inside this area. But the Russians have lost some ground. Okay, now we're on the southern front. They have lost a little bit of ground, by the way. There's an advancement of a Ukrainian unit that's moving towards the town of Polohoy. And I will say they've lost a good chunk because over the last 48 hours, the Russians have lost roughly about this, which is a pretty good chunk of ground, especially with that main route leaving out of Polohoy going to Hulupol. Like, we know this is all open ground, really long terrain. I'm still not entirely sure what the goal is for the Russians in the southern front because they really haven't made any big moves since the beginning of this war. But we're going to shift over to Kherson. For all y'all that know where Kherson's at, we're going to be shifting. We were just sitting roughly right here. Now we're moving over to Kherson. All right, Kherson is going to be the last stop for today's episode. And I will say the Russians inside this country of now or inside of Kherson area. The 42nd Combined Arms Army is the Russian element that's inside of Kherson. Is control of Kherson as of right now has been trying to maintain some sort of link to the southern shore. Okay, we all know these bridges along this line have been blown. Okay, we know that's to be the case as of right now. They need to maintain this river that goes through the Dnieper River is fairly wide, and you're not going to be able to just throw up a pontoon bridge really quick. But they have a pontoon ferry set up, which the entire world knows about, like literally everybody. And I'm sure that it's going to be targeted daily. But this ferry does provide a very, very small amount of resupply for the 42nd to keep their men fighting in this area. It does not provide them with a solid option for the element to actually retreat across the river if need be. Like, I don't really know what the entire plan is here for the Russians. I don't really even know where they're going to go because they're so much stranded at this point inside of Kherson. The only resupply route will be targeted daily by the Ukrainians. Like, they got to figure out the some other route along this river. Like, they have to. I was thinking maybe up here by the dam. Maybe you should shift a little bit more north. I'm just going to throw that out there. Like, if you're being targeted daily inside of Kherson, but the thing is, now they have to drive along this entire route to get resupplies into Kherson. So that's why they're having this ferry up and down right here. So I don't really know what they're going to do, nor do I really care what the Russians do. I'm just telling you guys what they probably should do. So probably rethink this through. I know that there's a chunk of my audience that is Russian that listens, and I don't know. Just going to throw it out there. Kherson's not looking too hot. The Russians have also reinforced on the northern front of Kherson, which we're going to go up here, just shift around a little bit. Up here on the northern side, okay, they've attempted to push back in some of the areas that were actually previously occupied, all up here, basically just along this edge. They've been trying to push back, but once again, I don't really see what the end goal is here inside this area for the Russians if they do not plan to continue their push north towards Kiev. They're just wasting manpower that should be shifting probably back down here and gaining control, because right now they do not. There's no way for them to get connection on the opposite side of the river. It's just not going to happen. So they need to maintain the ground down here where they can get resupplies of men. I would rather, if I was in their shoes, I would rather lose a little bit of ground to maintain the city. Like, if that thing's cut off, all those men in the north, there's no need for it. They shouldn't even be there. So actually, they shouldn't be in the country in the first place. But I hope you guys did enjoy this episode. I do love you guys. I will see you guys here tomorrow, the next day, with another one. I am out.